Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, broadcasting to you, my faithful audience and new listeners, which there seems to be more of all the time. That's great. From KGAB AM 650 Cheyenne and the Town Square Network and the EBN Network, webtalkradio.net. So today, I'm going to give you my opinion, as I promised, on the last three shows, where we reviewed executive orders, ads for guards at internment camps, PSYOPs crews who would help people love the government's policies at these internment camps. And I'm going to tie that into some current, very current events. You know, the executive privilege that's magically came out of the White House on Fast and Furious, the White House that didn't know anything about it. You know, if you invoke its executive privilege, there must be documents. If there's documents, you must have known something about it. And we're going to talk a little bit about Eric Holder, and we're going to talk a little bit about Mr. Obama's upcoming, executive order binge, particularly his little, I love the nuance, you know. I mean, really, when the lips move, it's a lie. This Amnesty Act that he passed, the Modified Dream Act, which he did for a number of reasons. I'm going to tie this all into together for you, and I'm going to tell you what my opinion is, because I told you I would. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney. I think my opinion of Mitt will probably surprise you. By the way, the gun control show is kind of coming together. As I told you the last two shows, I have unequivocal commitment from one of the top pro-gun folks in the United States. Let's say he's in the top five anti-gun folks in the United States. Interesting discussion with him. He originally said he wouldn't do it. Now he wants to do it, but he wants to impose conditions upon the interview. He's probably going to listen to this radio show. I'm just going to tell it like it is, folks. So if you're sure of your position and you are telling the truth on any subject or matter, why wouldn't you want to be interviewed? Particularly something that supposedly is so critical. So absolutely, it should be mandated for the health of the country, for the savior of the American people, and for the safety of all us poor folks who want to cling bitterly to our guns and religion. So hopefully, I will get a yes out of this gentleman, and if he doesn't give me a yes here in the next week, I will go to the next guy. But that's a show that we must do, particularly since the Obama administration right now is incredibly trying to tell us through Jay Carney, their press spokesman, and others, that they're okay with guns. Oh yeah, no, not a problem. In fact, they've expanded guns because now you can carry them in national parks. Too bad they forgot to tell you the rest of the story, as they usually do, which is that was a Bush policy that was then voted on afterwards, and Obama didn't veto it. You know why? Because it was attached to a credit card deal that he was touting and wanted to get out by Memorial Day in 2009 for a big political splash. Besides, if you're planning to outlaw all guns, it doesn't really matter if you're allowed to carry them in the national parks, does it? And then we're going to wrap up the show. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some things I have coming up. The forest fires near our ranch, which are pretty scary. The forest fire which burned down my very first ranch I ever bought, and a ranch my folks had for generations, different properties, but same deal. And the High Park fire in Colorado, which has displaced regrettably and horribly, lots of families, including whatever poor family, lived in the house that literally myself and a buddy built with our bare hands when we were 18, stick by stick. And we're going to talk a little bit about those forest fires and what's happening around the West and what it might mean to you. And that is going to be our show. I'm going to tell you a little bit, too, about Land for Love and Money. It's releasing this coming Tuesday. And, boy, it's been unbelievable. I'm stuttering here. The book has been a bestseller in three categories on Amazon, and we really, really have not marketed it. I mean, you've heard a few ads here on the radio. We've done a little bit on Facebook just starting a few days ago. It's remarkable. So hopefully people are going to get something out of this book. There's a lot of info in it. I'll tell you a little bit about that, too, during the show and where you can get it. Well, let's start off here. We have reviewed over the last 6 months, and all of this is coming down to the opinion I'm going to give you right now. We have reviewed the lack of energy policy on the part of this administration, the abject interference with workers' rights, that is, the right to not join a union if you don't want to, through appointments to the National Labor Relations Board, their whole deal with Boeing. We have reviewed their rejection of the Keystone Pipeline. We have reviewed a number of comments in Mr. Obama's own books. And now I see that the press is finally starting to read those books and finding the same stuff we did. That's good. We have reviewed Mr. Obama's czars, at least a good portion of them. I mean, it's all ugly. It goes from ugly to unbelievably ugly. Actually, from ugly to horror show ugly. And we have reviewed kind of Mr. Obama's background, and we have reviewed his narcissistic type personality. And we have also reviewed a number of lies. I mean, that's countless. That's bottomless. A number of lies that he continues to espouse despite facts and evidence ensconced in his own reports. In other words, the reports of his own government. This guy will actually stand up there and tell you something opposite. You know, 2 + 2 = 5. Trust me, I'm President Obama, 2 + 2 = 5. And then finally, over the last 3 weeks, we have reviewed his binge of executive orders, including through the NDA, the National Defense Act, being able to just, you know, intern you and throw away the key and you don't get your 10-cent phone call, to the Law of the Sea Treaty, where he's giving away our naval rights, our energy development rights, our rights really within our territorial waters around the United States to some larger focus group called the UN. We've reviewed the UN itself and Agenda 21, and I've tied that into you both on the policies of Mr. Obama's government through the EPA and his czars, and to the policies which are starting to permeate down to state, local, and county governments. I think in a lot of cases because these local officials don't really realize what they're doing. And I've also reviewed some of the people who are starting to sound the alarm on all this and starting to galvanize Congress to try and block this horrible usurping, if you will, of congressional power by the executive branch. We've reviewed Mr. Obama's attack on the Supreme Court. We have not reviewed Obamacare. I'm waiting for the Supreme Court decision to do that for you. There's no sense reviewing with you what might change. But after that ruling, that's a definite show that you'll want to listen to, because I've been putting together stuff on that deal for over 8 months, and I've read the bill, 2,700 pages. I will admit I didn't get, you know, I fell asleep several times, and I didn't read every single word. But I know the bill. It's way uglier than you thought. Nancy Pelosi wasn't kidding when she said you have to pass it to find out what's in it, even including a 3% tax on your real estate when you sell it. That should be good for a real estate market. We've reviewed Mr. Obama's cozy, footsie, you know, he says one thing, business is bad and the 1% and fair. But on the other hand, I mean, you know, he might as well kiss Jeffrey Immelt from General Electric. He's in bed with Goldman Sachs at the same time he tries to tell the American people that Wall Street is bad, and on and on and on. Here's my opinion. My opinion not only hasn't changed, it has strengthened through my research and through these shows and the presentations to you. This is all a plan. None of this is an accident. None of this is a mistake. All of this is a plan. And the plan is, when he said fundamentally transform this country, what he meant to move it from a constitutional republic to at the least, a European socialist state, with, of course, he and his buddies at the helm, because the rules don't apply to them. They're much smarter than we are, and therefore they have special privileges, even down to health care, I might add. But that's a different show. Now, Mr. Obama is starting to show his stripes. You know, number one, we have his little slip, which I laughed at. The private sector is doing fine. We need to help the public sector. Just so you know, the public sector unemployment is 4.7%. Real numbers. That's real numbers. And the private sector is about 19.2%. Real numbers. Don't go by that 8.2%. That's another thing they've been doing, of course, manipulating the numbers. All of this is designed from the Dodd-Frank Act, which cripples little banks, which are the cornerstone of Main Street business, which is the cornerstone of jobs, to crippling energy supplies for this country so that prices go up and further damage the economy, and so that we spread the wealth to other countries rather than keeping it within our borders, to his cry for higher taxes in the face of, and there really is, I don't think there's an economist out there, I don't know of them anyway, who doesn't say that if you raise taxes, if you allow the quote-unquote Bush tax cuts to expire, it will automatically send us into another recession or worse. Okay. He's been all over Europe. He wants them to fund more and more money. In other words, do the same thing that he's been doing here. Print money, increase the debt, spend your money that your kids will owe to buy votes for him and his cronies, and 40 cents on the dollar is borrowed, whether it's from China or, as I've revealed to you on these shows, from the Federal Reserve itself, who's in cahoots, it's my firm opinion, with Mr. Obama and his ilk. So, one of the things I want to bring to your attention, because my opinion is absolute, 110% concrete, that this is part of a plan. This man wants to bring down this country. He may like America, but he likes America remade in the image of his Marxist background. And I don't mean socialist background. I mean Marxist background. Barack Obama is a communist. He is not a socialist. Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto. He didn't call it the Socialist Manifesto. And the basic of that book, I mean, you can, one of these days, if you have a chance, you should read it. Your eyes will glaze, but you at least skim through it. Know thy enemy. But the basic premise of that book is, from each according to their ability, to each according to their needs. Let me put that in modern-day American lingo. Spread the wealth, fair, the 1% is bad. Now, when you're espousing principles right out of Karl Marx's book, whatever glossy little spin you want to put on the words, you're communist, you're not a socialist. When you adopt a campaign slogan, which was adopted by Stalin and Mao Tse-tung and others, when you appoint members of the Communist and Socialist Party to your cabinet and to your board, when a member of the Communist Party is your closest advisor, Valerie Jarrett, when you leak secrets critical to the national defense and the lives not only of Americans serving in the military, who are having their feet cut out from under them, or operatives and agents of other countries, but the American public itself, you know, that's not a mistake, folks. It's partly ego, it's partly desperation, which brings us to the next point. Because a desperate Barack Obama is a really dangerous Barack Obama. And I think that they kind of see the handwriting on the wall. I really do. The handwriting on the wall is that slowly but surely the light bulbs are blinking across America. People are starting to tune in. They're starting to see that 3 years ago he said he was going to cut the deficit in half or be a one-term president, and instead he's grown it by more than all the former presidents combined. They're starting to see that under his watch, the increase in debt of the United States is greater than all the other presidents combined. Now, he's trying to blame Bush and, you know, all the old tired arguments. It's the tsunami and it's Europe and it's everybody but him, of course. It's just he's a savior of us all, he and his minions. But the bottom line of all this, it's all on purpose. And they're getting desperate because they just might lose this upcoming election. And they're so close to getting this grand plan that began with Woodrow Wilson in place, they're panicking. They're making mistakes. For instance, this executive privilege thing on Fast and Furious. So Eric Holder stonewalls, there's 140,000 documents available on Fast and Furious. He provides 7,600 of them. He refuses to provide the rest. He lies about it three times. In fact, there are three written retractions of sworn testimony and representation to the Congress now on record, the latest one being last week from Mr. Holder. One of them, a letter last February, said they didn't know anything about it, and it took him 6 months to retract that. Now, Mr. Holder is kit and caboodle with Mr. Obama. They're two peas in a pod. This is a guy who doesn't want people to have picture ID to vote. You need a picture ID to go into a book signing with Michelle Obama. You need a picture ID to check in at a hotel. You obviously need a picture ID to drive a car. I mean, think about what in your life, you know, if you buy a pack of cigarettes, you need a picture ID. But you don't need a picture ID to vote? Wow. What do you think's behind that? Do you think it's a 1965 Voting Act? Or do you think it's they like dead people voting, they like people voting more than once, and they like illegal aliens voting? What do you think? Think about Mr. Obama's recent edict that about 880,000 illegal aliens, all youngsters, are exempt from the laws of the United States. Now think about his oath, sworn on a Bible, or perhaps in his case, a Quran. Think about his oath to uphold the laws of the United States. This is not the first time that he's totally ignored a law or tried to change it by kingly fiat rather than through the proper channels prescribed by the Constitution, i.e., the Congress, the legislative branch. No. All on purpose, folks. All on purpose. We're going to take a short break. We're going to come back. I'm going to finish up my opinion for you. And then we're going to get into some current events, which will tie that in even more. Because we're going to revisit Europe for just a few minutes. You guys are probably tired of this, but I'm telling you, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. And Mr. Obama knows it, and he's willing to spend your money to make sure that it gets kicked down the road till after the election. He's really good at spending your money to make sure he gets reelected. That's coming up.
It is the spring of 1855. America is on the cusp of her great westward expansion and on the threshold of becoming a world power. The promise of land, freedom, self-determination, and economic opportunity is known worldwide, drawing immigrants from every continent eager to exchange lives of drudgery and emptiness for the hope and romance of a country embarked on the course of greatness. This is the setting of the 16-book Threads West series. Read Lance Rosenthal's epic American saga of the West, in which a few brave men and women venture out to love and struggle in the beautifully vibrant but unforgiving landscape of the West. Threads West. And when you finish that multi-award-winning number one best-selling novel, you can also get the number one best-selling Maps of Fate, the second book in the saga, just released this spring. Find them on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and in all major bookstores. Go to ThreadsWestSeries.com. That's ThreadsWestSeries.com.
So on Tuesday, that's, 48, 72 hours from now, my first nonfiction book, which has already been, even though we haven't been marketing it, a bestseller on Amazon as a pre-order, is released nationally, and you'll be able to get it at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, most Hastings stores anyway, lots of independent bookstores, and of course, Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. Let me tell you that there's only 3,000 copies of the first printing remaining. In other words, unspoken for, not pre-ordered, not reserved on our website. The website is www.landforloveandmoney.com. That's www.landforloveandmoney.com. Pretty cool, and got some interviews of me by other radio folks and TV folks you might want to listen to. But this book is unique. You know, there's a number of land books out there, how-to land books, you know, how to buy a house, how to buy a piece of land, all that kind of stuff, and they're great. There's some very good books. This book is different. It's unique. It's the first of its kind. I have a really wide range of experience in my 40-year career in land. I'm fourth generation land and cattle, but I've consulted the two foreign governments, Canada and Chile. Been involved in many states, over 5,000 transactions. Let me just tell you that I've kind of seen it all. That doesn't mean I don't learn something new. You know, the mark of a real expert in something is somebody who makes mistakes. There's no such thing, and if everybody tells you differently, you can laugh at them. There's no such thing as the perfect expert. Impossible. Impossible. And this book is written like stories. They're anecdotes. They're real-life situations that I've experienced that have occurred to me firsthand, first person, for the last 40 years. It's the first of three volumes. And 3 or 4 weeks after each volume, there's going to be a workbook, Green for Green. It's going to kind of be in CD-ROM format, and we'll have actual contract clauses, conservation easement clauses. Obviously, the name's redacted for people's privacy and only after their permission, that you can use after consulting your attorney. I'm not an attorney. I'm not a CPA. You need your team. But I really think this is going to help millions of folks. Because what this book explores is your spiritual connection to land and your financial connection to land and how those two connections are interrelated. You know, it's well and good to be able to follow a checklist on how to buy a piece of land or a checklist on how to build a home or a checklist on how to get financing. That's what I call the how-to books. This is the first book that tells you the behind the scenes. What's going on at the bank when they say no? Very few people know that. What's going on with the government in terms of what it's trying to do to banks and how that affects the value of your home, the value of your land, your ability to sell it, your ability to get financing, or your buyer getting financing, and why are they doing it? Goodbye. There's appraisals. Everybody knows about appraisals. Well, listen, you don't know about appraisals. You need to know what happens behind the scenes with appraisals. What's happening with an appraiser right now with these new regulations? And to the cost of doing business for banks, which increases your cost. Conservation easements. You know, people, a lot of people don't know what conservation easements are. They're terrific instruments which can save you all sorts of tax and, although most people don't know it, lower your estate tax forever. That's the biggest tax. You know, that 55% death tax after you paid taxes for 80 years and you croak and you want to give the money to your kids and grandkids and the government steps in, takes 55%. Outrageous. Conservation easements can help you with that, but they have to be done right. They have to be done right, because if you do them wrong, you'll ruin your land. So that's in this book. Additionally, there's some really fun chapters. Living in small towns and, you know, with the speed of light is about how fast news travels. You know, a slice of Americana is about how to get involved in small town sports and be friends with your neighbors and be part of the community. I mean, it's a really wide-ranging thing, but what it is the big picture. Because, you know, you can know how to do all this stuff and you can qualify for your loan, but you better know the gotchas out there. You better know how it can all turn bad, and you better have a plan for when it does, because life happens. And this book is really about what to do with real estate to plan for when life happens and what to do when life happens. And nobody's ever written a book like it before. And I think you'll like it. I think you'll laugh. I think you'll groan. I think a couple of chapters on some things you absolutely don't know about what's being done with your tax dollars to screw up your market values and to reward friends of the administration. You will just flip out. Has not been in print before. I'm one of the few people who know about this stuff. And it's personal experience. So if you get a chance, grab yourself a book. Like I said, there's literally only 3,000 books left on the planet for print one. BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. You can go to our website on Tuesday, the release day, and there's actually kind of a fun little contest, some free consultations and some other stuff going on, and you can read about it. And I hope you all enjoy it. More than that, I hope it helps you, and I think it will. Now, we're back to my opinion on Mr. Obama. I think Mr. Obama is desperate. I think he's desperate for two things. Number one, he's desperate because the people who really pull his strings, like George Soros and others, I think that they're kind of wailing on him, saying, hey, Barry, what's happening here? You're kind of blowing it. You know, so his benefactors are kind of sawing away at his legs. His base is going, hey, man, you didn't give us what we want. And middle America is going, what is going on here? What the hell happened? As people wake up and start seeing this cadence, you know, this cascade of bad decisions. Well, they're not bad decisions to him. They're the right decisions to him based on his goals. Bad decisions for America and for the middle class and for all of us who believe in the values of America and the capitalist system. A desperate Barack Obama is a dangerous Barack Obama. Think about the executive orders. Think about the ads for internment camp guards. I tried to Google it, and maybe some of you will have more success. And unfortunately, I lost my notes. But it was like 10 to 15 years ago. And it was Van Jones and some others before he dropped the radical pose to achieve the radical end. And they were talking about what they would have to do with that portion of America which would not come under the thumb of a socialist government. Remember, Van Jones is a radical communist. He was also a czar, remember. He was in charge of the green jobs. You know, those jobs I told you the last show cost $11 million each. $11 million each. Great green jobs program, Van and Barry. Great. Terrific. Anyway, in that interview, and I've read the notes and I've listened to the interview and I just can't find it. Maybe it's been wiped off the web, as so many things seem to be right now. But in that interview, he said, and this is not a quote, but it's kind of paraphrasing based on my memory. He said, well, we estimate there's 25 million hardcore people that we can't convince. And those people will just have to go to these camps and never be heard of before again. Now, once again, that's not a direct quote. That's the gist of that interview. Now, you take that 15 years ago, you couple it with the fact that progressives are very patient. They've started this ball rolling with Woodrow Wilson way back in the 19-teens, okay, before the Roaring Twenties. And they've continued to nudge it along, as Cass Sunstein, Obama's regulatory czar, would say, and has written in his books. And now they're so close, right? America is on its knees economically. Its military projection has been diminished on purpose. Its standing in the world has been diminished, both with enemies and allies, on purpose. It's dependent on foreign energy on purpose. Its banking system is coming under a tougher and tougher, heavier and heavier thumb on purpose. Many of its manufacturing industries, i.e. GM, a dismal showing, is now basically in government hands. Think about all this. The bottom line is, Mr. Obama has in place, except for a few elements which have been chopped up by a federal court, as we discussed in the last few shows, where they blocked part of his executive orders and part of the NDA, and by a courageous but small contingent of congressmen and congressladies led by a gal out of Florida. So, if you put all this together, what do you come up with? Desperate people do desperate things. Although it pains me to say this, and it really does, about a president of the United States, because I respect the office, and of course I love the country, I think Mr. Obama would love a crisis right now. He's trying to manufacture them, you know, trying to give us a red herring, which in financial terms means something that brings your eye off the real ball in play. You know, he has his little amnesty thing going, and he has, you know, this going and that going and whatever. The bottom line is that Mr. Obama is quite capable of orchestrating a crisis. Remember, orchestration of crisis, Cloward and Piven? That was in some of my first shows a year and a half ago. You don't have to take over the United States with guns. You don't need a revolution. You merely overburden it with financial entitlement. Gee, that sounds familiar. And he referenced it in his books, too. God, where was the press on that in 2008? So, I think Mr. Obama could kind of stage something like, you know, maybe somebody is, you know, make some type of attempt on the White House, or they make some type of attempt on the government officials, and it's all trumped up, and he uses his divisive tactics. I mean, you know, it's this kind of guy doing it or that kind of guy doing it, whatever. Or I think Mr. Obama would be pleased. I really believe this. I mean, there's no way for me to prove it. He would be pleased if Iran got the bomb. He doesn't like Israel. He hates Israel. Israel is not Barack Obama's friend. In fact, they're an impediment to his plan. Any democracy or republic is an impediment to his plan. He would love to see some kind of blow up in the Middle East, which would cause a crisis. I think Barack Obama, based on his dismal record at the border, his security leaks at the highest level, particularly as it relates to Iranian development of a nuclear bomb, and a host of other factors, most of which you know, so I'm not going to bore you with them, I think he would love to have a catastrophe here at home so that it could be a crisis that he could capitalize on politically, both because he's a rigid communist / socialist ideologue, and because he is a narcissist egomaniac. Boy, these are tough words about the President of the United States, isn't it? But you know, it is what it is. 2 + 2 = 4. I have seen no indication whatsoever by this president at any time over the last more than 3.5 years, and particularly over the last 6 months, as his polls sag, that would lead me in any direction but what I'm telling you right now. Nothing. And if some of you have something I'm missing, by all means, bring it to my attention. AuthorSiteRead at AOL.com. That's AuthorSiteRead, R-E-I-D, at AOL.com. Don't be bashful. You tell me something that Barack Obama has done that, A, decreases, I'm talking about significantly, the size of government, B, keeps us safer, and don't give me the drone stuff in Pakistan. You know, that has a whole different mission. That has to do with the projection of power over there in the Mideast. With the giveaways to Russia, yeah, the reset that we got nothing on, his patting on the knee of the Russian president, hey, help me get reelected, and, you know, I'll help you with your disarmament thing. Yeah, listen, I can go right down the list. His intervention in Libya, but his lack of intervention in Syria after he espoused the responsibility to protect doctrine, which we talked about 4 or 5 shows ago. Originally promulgated, by the way, by George Soros, and now, shall we say, propped up and promoted by Mr. Obama's friends at the UN. Give me one thing that says this guy is not for global government, is anti-sovereign America, is not for a ruling class elite, and against the middle class. Give me one thing. Oh, I'll listen to your argument on unions, but you kind of lose me when unions aren't being abolished. What's being promoted is the individual's right to choose whether they're in a union or not. You know, I gave you an example, and this was about 6-7 months ago. I did several shows on the unions. Maybe it was 8-9 months ago. You can go back in the archives. It was right after the tempest in Wisconsin. I guess maybe it was a year ago. The bottom line is that if somebody came to your door and said, you will become a member of the YMCA, and you will have $20 deducted from your paycheck by the state every week or every month, that will go to the unions, who will use it as they wish without regard to how you want it used or whether you want it paid or whether you want it taken from you or whether you're even a member, you kind of lose me. But I'll listen to the arguments. All right, it's time for a break because I'm starting to get steamed up now going down this litany of nonsense at this country that we love is contending with on purpose. I mean, it's bad enough when people make mistakes. God knows George Bush made several. Clinton, you know, he had his own agenda, but he made some. I mean, they've all made some. No president in the world's not going to make a mistake. My point is, none of this is a mistake. These people are brilliant. They're patient. They're progressives. They're communists. They have a goal, and they will do whatever it takes. A la Sol Alinsky, the means justifies the end. All right, I'm foaming at the mouth. We'll talk to you in just a minute after a word from our sponsors.
Critics rave about the Threads West and American Saga series. Read Lance Rosenthal's number one bestseller, comparing it to Lonesome Dove, to Centennial, and even to Gone with the Wind. The Threads West series begins in 1855 and unfolds the riveting, sensual, adventure-filled tale of a country on the cusp of greatness. Fueled with passion, each thrilling adventure-packed novel follows lives woven into multi-generational tapestries of lust, duplicity, enmity, love, and triumph. Threads West and Maps of Fate, both number one bestsellers, are available at Barnes & Noble, Hastings, Amazon.com, and BarnesandNoble.com. Read the romance of the West, the story of America, her people, and her spirit. Go to ThreadsWestSeries.com. That's ThreadsWestSeries.com. Get them both today.
Welcome back. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, broadcasting out of KGAB AM 650 on your dial, and its affiliates, the Town Square Network, Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the EBN Network, webtalkradio.net. So where we left off was we were going to talk about some extemporaneous events, and I'm going to bring you up to speed over what's happened just in the last week, because all these events are kind of like a slow motion, you know, it's kind of like a plane that's on fire, that's in this slow motion spiral toward the earth. And the pilot has that scarf that's floating in the wind and the goggles on and the leather cap, and he has a big thumbs up with a grin on his face. That's the best picture I can paint for you. All right, so manufacturing. This is as of June 15th in Money News. Factory production shrank 0.4% last month. That's a huge drop, folks. Huge drop. It's more convincing evidence that the economy is stuck in low gear, said Joe Mamimbo. He's a very well-known market analyst at TravelX Global Business Payments. That poses a big threat to Mr. Obama. You know, desperate people do desperate things. Just think about how all this stuff is piling up right now. And with each little pile, he gets a little bit more desperate, not only because of ideology, but because of ego, because he definitely has one. You know, he walks on water. He can part the sea. Okay, the manufacturing is an anchor of the economy, but consumer spending is the foundation of the economy. And consumer sentiment fell to a six-month low in June, as well it should. I mean, is anybody surprised? Not only that, the consumer sentiment has resulted in a drop in consumer spending from 2.7% drop. That's a huge drop, folks. Think about a $12 trillion or $13 trillion economy, which is our annual GDP, and think about what 3%, just, you know, make it a round number for multiplication's sake, 3% is a huge drop in spending. And obviously that translates out to less money for businesses and less money that businesses have to hire people. Which brings us to the next point, same article. Hiring by U.S. employers has slowed for four straight months. Retail sales contracted in May. New applications for jobless benefits have risen for five of the last 6 weeks. Wow. It's all kind of coming together. And the output for durable goods for better, lack of better description, is kind of goods that last a long time. They dropped 0.5%. Auto production slid 1.5%. Production for non-durable goods, you know, kind of short-term type stuff, use it for a year, throw it out, dropped 0.2%. Total industrial output dropped 0.1%. They expected a 0.1% increase. Now, these don't sound like big numbers, but once again, take those numbers and apply it to a 13, give or take, trillion-dollar number. And, you know, 0.1% of 1% is billions and billions of dollars. 1% is $130 billion. Think about how many jobs $130 billion would create. Or, should we say in this case, be lost. Okay, the New York Federal Reserve kind of has their own index, kind of a weird little index that people don't watch much, but it's called the Empire State Index. And this is an index of manufacturing. It fell to 2.3. That's a 15 point drop from the month before. The lowest it's been since November of 2011. None of this is good news. And it's all coupled with, yes, not only the bad policy of, or the intentionally bad policy of this administration and their co-conspirators, the Senate Democrats, and then, of course, the puppeteers, the people behind all these people, but you have Europe. Remember we talked about a few weeks ago the $125 billion, give or take, that Spain got lent? And I told you this is a Band-Aid. This is absolutely throwing good money after bad. Guess what? Spain's unemployment rose. The interest rates they're now paying for debt have now approached 7%, which virtually every economist who has a degree says is unsustainable for any government to pay. Unsustainable for any government to pay. As you probably know, the Greek elections, the guys who want to stay in the euro, kind of the conservatives, they had a narrow victory. Enough to form a government, which they haven't been able to do for like 90 days, but barely enough to survive. Look to Greece to fall into crisis again, folks. This government, with a population that is unwilling and unable to survive or to cut back on the entitlements, you know, the government teat that they have been trained to suckle at, it's never going to work. There's a crisis coming in Spain. There's a crisis coming in Greece. Actually, the crisis is here. The wreck has happened. Now it's the slow motion spiral to the ground. And they're going to hit with a loud crash. Also, Italy. Yeah, the interest rates for Italy went up. You know, Spain and Italy, they're the third and fourth largest economies in the Euro group. And guess what the IMF is doing? You know, this is the same IMF. Remember that show I did, five, six, seven shows ago? You can find it in the archives. Kind of a fascinating show about the collapse of the U.S. dollar and why it won't be the reserve currency of the world and what that would mean to us and why they're making it happen and all the forces behind it, the U.N. This is in writing. The U.N., the BRIC countries, okay, that's Russia, India, China, all going to their own currencies, the OPEC nations, Mr. Obama and his treasury ministers, you know, the guy who doesn't pay taxes. All right, so if you take all that, you'll find out that the IMF is now pressuring Germany, Europe's strongest economy, most conservative economy, least debt, low interest rate economy, to loan money directly to the banks of these other countries. Do you remember how the money had been going through? I talked about this in the show. It went through the IMF. The IMF then lent it to the national banks, and the national banks bought the bonds of these failing governments. Now the IMF wants Germany to lend the money directly to Italian banks, Spanish banks, etc. And rightfully, Germany is saying, are you crazy? And on top of this, the credit rating agencies are about to lower the credit rating of 22 of Europe's largest banks this week, as a matter of fact. That's right, this week. And there's no way around this, folks. This is a slow motion spiral wreck. It's going to affect us. There's nothing that we can do about it. We just have to make sure that Mr. Obama doesn't send our hard-earned United States dollars over to Europe, because he'll do anything with our money to get himself reelected. And watch for him to do that. Listen for the signs of the Fed, quote unquote, easing monetary policy, or something that comes up where we, you know, he already said it at this big meeting of the G20 this week. Oh, well, the United States has to do its fair share. Hey, Barry, guess what? The United States is us, it's our money, and we don't want to do our fair share. In fact, what they're trying to do to Germany is spread the wealth even more. That's right. Even more. It's outrageous. See, I'm getting myself all worked up again. Oh, and while all this is happening, I want you to know that the European Court, and I'm not making this up, I'm really not, the European Court ruled in Brussels yesterday, or 2 days ago, excuse me, they ruled that if you're a European worker and you take a vacation and you get sick while you're on your vacation, you get to take another paid vacation I am not making this up. Now, you talk about being out of touch with reality, or on the contrary, globalists trying to bring down these systems. That's my theory. And I don't know what better proof you could have. I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right. That is about it for the news I want to share with you. I'm hoping to have this gun control show put together for you. You know, waiting for the anti-gun guys. I mean, I thought they were so sure of their stance. Then they don't need to be scared of me or the guy that I have on that's pro-gun. I mean, if you have a good argument, let's hear it. I'm going to end the show with just a little bit on Land for Love and Money, the first of the three-volume nonfiction, my very first, that's releasing on Tuesday. Let me read you a little bit off the back cover. Controversial real-life truths of land and real estate, sometimes serious, sometimes humorous, essential, eye-opening information you won't hear from your banker or attorney. Each tale, the good, the bad, and the ugly, affords the reader a rare learning experience on land acquisition and disposition, valuable instruction about today's floundering financial system, real estate downturn, increasing regulation, and uncertain tax climate. Social, political, and urgent economic considerations critical to land purchase, enjoyment, ownership, and value, any type, size, use, or location, from a third of an acre to thousands, are revealed. Each chapter covers invaluable secrets of land purchase and sale in unstable economic times. And you know, there's all sorts of fun things. I have one chapter in here which is called When Pigs Are Fat and Happy and Hogs Get Slaughtered. Another one that says, It's entitled, You Want a Loan? The Banker Slaps His Thigh and Laughs. Some of the other things. Why Your Banker Says No. What's Really Happening Behind the Vault Doors. This Ain't Your Mama's Appraisal. The Rules Have Changed. When It's Time for the Seller to Sign the Dotted Line. Forget the price. Let's talk net. Looking Under the Rocks. The Due Diligence and the PPPPP Rule. It can save a wreck. The government is not here to help you, and it might be on purpose. Mammoth real estate profits guaranteed, all from your pocket. Thank you. Let me tell you, that one, folks, will set your hair on fire. It's never been in print before in a book like this. And last, Buying and Selling Smart, The Silver Lining in an Age of Upheaval. That'll give you an idea about this book. It's different. This is more than a how-to book. This is a how-to-think, investigate, and use your head to ensure that your heart is tickled and your wallet is padded. I hope you grab them. Barnes and Noble and Amazon.com. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Till next week, have a great week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please go to webtalkradio.net and look for Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side. There, you can also click to purchase the first two volumes of his number one best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, An American Saga, and Maps of Fate. And now, the first volume of his new nonfiction series, Land for Love and Money, is available everywhere. Or go to landforloveandmoney.com. That's Land for Love and Money. We'd also like to remind you that if you missed any shows, you can go to the show archives on Reed's WebTalkRadio.net page. We look forward to seeing you again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.